when you asked Peggy to marry you, and she said, are you crazy?
Yeah.
Take us from there.
I was, of course, still in Harvard in my last semester. You didn't have jet airplanes then. You had prop planes. And it was a nine-hour flight from Boston to Los Angeles. We had to turn in a big paper every Friday. I'd turn in this paper, then get the red-eye flight to Los Angeles, fly most of the night and get there early Saturday morning. Peggy would go out Saturday morning, park in her car, and wait for the plane to get in. We'd spend all day Saturday and then go out Saturday night. Then I'd have to leave Sunday morning to get back to school. I did that about six times in the 12 weeks that were left. That was what I was known for at Harvard, was two things. I had Buell air horns on my Cadillac, which were what trains had. And being an English major, everybody took their finals in this one library room, 600 and some of us. Of course, the engineers and the chemists, they couldn't write. They'd know what everything was, but they'd just punish themselves. Well, I'd write it in an hour and a half, and I'd get up and leave. I'd always, in the 600, be the first one to leave the class. So then I'd go get my car and drive to the library and honk my Buell horn. So and then the worst part of the relationship was there's a three-hour time difference. So when it was 10 o'clock at night in Boston, it was 7 o'clock in Los Angeles. I'd call to talk to her, and of course she'd be out to dinner or out. And I couldn't wait till 3 in the morning, but we spent a lot of money on the telephone. She was making one movie after another, and she just wasn't ready to. She made a movie with Dick Powell, and he was married to June Allison then. When school ended, and I was out of school and working for the company, I'd fly out, and we'd go out to dinner with them two or three times a week. June and Dick would say, why don't you marry this guy? Get out of this rat race. I mean, you're crazy. I'd bought her an engagement ring, and she'd wear it. Then when I'd leave, she'd give it back to me. So I wasn't making much progress. We had one just horrendous fight. She said she never wanted to see me again. Don't call me. Don't write me. I'll tear your letters up.
Do you remember what the fight was about?
Yeah, we had a big argument at a dinner where she was with another couple, and she kind of talked down to this girl, and I got outside and said, that's the cheapest, just really told her off.
That she shouldn't have talked down to this girl.
So that was the end. The next day, I was going to leave. I always stayed at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And they had a bar where you could go in the mornings and they'd serve breakfast at the bar. So I went in to get something before I left. And her agent came in, saw me and sat down beside me. Said, what are you leaving for? I said, well, Peggy and I have had a van-ending fight. And I said, she never wants to see me again. I just want you to know that if she ever needs anything, you call me because I want to give it, and I don't want her to know about it. You just take care of it. He said, you really love that girl, don't you? I said, well, yeah, I do love her. He said, look, let's go see her. I said, she's not going to see me. He said, I'll work that out. She'll always see me. Get in the back on the floor of the car, and she won't know you're there, and I'll go pick her up. So he goes to the Hollywood Studio Club, gets her. Of course, she hadn't dressed or anything, comes down in shorts and gets in the front seat. What do you want? He said, well, I need to talk to you. Let's just drive. So he drives her away from the club, and then he said, a friend of yours wants to talk to you. What are you talking about? Hey, well, so I get up. We kind of made it up a little bit.
Did she laugh then and
well, finally,
break in?
Yeah, I mean, he said, look, you don't be such a... If it hadn't been for that, that might have been the end of things. I don't know. But one of the things that was funny about it, she said, we're starting from the beginning. There's no kissing. There's no nothing. And it was so strange because, boy, I'd take her home at night and she'd say goodnight. And one night I had the bungalow at Beverly Hills, which were where all the big shots stayed. I knew the wine she liked and I had this bottle of wine and she was making a movie. She was going to come by after they finished shooting. She came by and I had the fire going in the fireplace and this bottle of wine. She came in, well, how are you? Picked up the bottle of wine, took it and left. But anyway, I left because I told her that if she wasn't ready to get married, I was not going to fool her anymore. So I went up to Okoboji and had the worst 3 months of my life and didn't call her, of course. Then one day the phone rang, and it was Peggy. She said, I'm in Washington. President Truman has invited me up to represent the industry. I've been thinking about who I would like to have had here, and I'm going to New York tomorrow to do some publicity work, and I want you to come up. You do? Yeah. I said, are you ready to get married? Oh, my. I said, look, just say yes or no, because I'm not coming unless you do. Okay, I'll marry you. She told people, hey, that was the worst proposal any girl ever had in her entire life. So anyway, I went up. That would have been in late August, and then we got married in November.
What year?
1951.
Where did you get married?
In Athens, Tennessee. That's where she lived. All the movie magazines wanted to come and cover it. And I said, I don't want that. So she said, okay, I won't let any of them come. Chattanooga paper. And McCall's was a big woman's magazine, and I didn't remember it, but they took about a six-page thing of it. I saw it the other day. I was amazed that I didn't realize all that, but pictures of the wedding and then her and us together and all.
So that McCall's magazine is still around somewhere.
Yeah. I saw one the other day. We must have it. I don't remember where I saw it.
Did your family come out?
Oh, yeah.
Your father?
Yeah. Dad was my best man. I had two Harvard classmates and two other fellows that I knew before I went into the service.
Okay, you've just surprised me. The relationship you had with your dad, and yet you asked him to be your best man.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, of course, he had given me the chance at the company. I'd just come back into the office then in 51. I'd been out in the field for a year. But I just had a great respect for him, and I don't know, I was Hans's best man. Dad and I had a tremendous, he was tremendously honest, very forceful, very dedicated, worked all the time, and took the company through some very serious financial times just by sheer strength of will. I always had a great respect.
Respect, right. But isn't there a point where Peggy said, I want you to get a job? Talk to us about that. That's what really sent you back to the company.
Well, yeah, that was when I proposed to her.
And you were going to be a college professor.
I was going to be a teacher. She said, just get a job, you know, and I don't even know you, but you need to get a job. I don't know why she didn't think teaching was a job, but that's what she, so that's when I went with the company.
If she hadn't said.
If she had said, gosh, I think it's wonderful that you could be out here and teach, I'd have done that.
And never have thought about the company.
Never thought about it.
So she got you on the track
and
to come.
And yet the interesting thing about that, I loved every day of the 50 years I was there. And we went through some really tough times.
In the company, now you're talking.
Yeah, and I always loved it. I'll never forget, I told the boys as they grew up, find something you love to do. Don't ever do anything that you don't have a passion for.